Hi there, and welcome to the Man in the Van podcast, your regular audio drive time companion, where our main aim is education through a conversation. Through our conversations, delve deep into all things related to the tradesperson contracting community, from news to education to industry happenings, helping you do better business while building a better and improved South African tradesmen and women contracting community. Thanks for tuning in. Let's start the conversation.
Very warm welcome to our audience. My name is Willem Klopper. I'm your host, and in this episode, we will discuss auditing. Now, with me in studio, I have my anchors, Ms. Lorraine Moy from PARB and Mr. Steve Brown from IOPSA. And then, of course, I've got our guests, Mr. Richard Bailey from IOPSA, Mr. Adrian Meiberg, also from IOPSA, and Mr. Herman Strauss from PARB. Just before we give our guests the opportunity to introduce themselves, let's hit the brakes. We'd like to remind our audience that this episode is proudly brought to you by Articulated Plumber. Let's continue the conversation. Now, back to our guests. Richard, if we can start off just a very brief introduction of yourself, who you are, and what your current role in the sector is.
I'm involved with PERB in the sense that I'm on the national executive, but with IOPSA, I'm auditing, and then I do this sort of stuff as well, a bit of training here and there. So, yeah, and I'm about almost hitting a half a century.
Adrian, if you don't mind, please just give us a brief introduction of yourself, who you are, what your current role in the sector is.
Hi, Willem. Start off with the most important thing. I'm a licensed plumber, have been for a while. I am currently the senior plumbing and drainage inspector for the Nelson Mandela Bay Metro. I am an IOPSA compliance auditor. I'm the current IOPSA president, and I'm also a PRB Exco member. So I'm reasonably involved in various spheres of the plumbing industry.
All right. And then Mr. Herman Strauss, if you would just get to give us a little bit of an introduction to yourself, please.
My current role in the industry is I manage the audit process from the PRB. So my background, I come from a compliance environment. I've worked many years for the SABS, doing testings. I sat on several of the standards committees where the standards are being written. Still busy with that. But as I say, at the moment, we quite enjoy the process at PRB and making sure that the audits actually take place and add value to the plumbing industry.
Oh, thank you for that, Herman. Adrian, why is there an auditing process, and why is there the requirement for issuing a COC when plumbing work is done?
I think the short and sweet answer to that would be that as a professional, in other words, a licensed plumber, we need to issue COCs for work done as per the professional body rules. Being a PRB member, there's a set of ground rules or house rules, if you want to call them, and it involves issuing COCs for work done by a said professional. This adds value or a win-win situation, if you want to refer to it like that, where both the client is then basically guaranteed improved quality work, but at the same time, with the plumbers being audited, it's part of upskilling the individual that is being audited. That would be the reason for issuing the COC as being part of a professional body. As far as the audits are concerned, that is a requirement for a professional body from SACWA, that all their members as professionals or their registered members, that their work be monitored and their work being audited as part of a quality process. Like I said, if it adds value or the COC process adds value, then that would be part of it, that the work being monitored and audited by the professional body on their members.
So if we just get jumping in there, let's just drop the word member and talk about the registered individual. Remember, we keep having issues with members of this and members of that. So for clarity, you are a IOPSA member, and with PIRB, you're a registered licensed plumber.
You're a licensed plumber. Yes, sorry about that, Mr. Brown. Yes, that would be the correct terminology for the rest of the session.
All right. Thank you for that, Adrian. I appreciate that answer. And Herman, you said that from a PRB perspective and your involvement with the auditing process and managing the auditing process from a PRB's perspective, can you tell me what are the criteria for selecting auditors? And if I could just add two more questions to that specific question, how do auditors become listed as auditors in the first place? And secondly, to add to that, how are auditors selected to perform audits on COCs that have been selected for audit?
All right, that's a lot of stuff, but let's get to it. So first of all, it's quite important to understand that PRB does not have staff that does the audits. The audit function is actually subcontracted to IOPSA, and we can get to that. But there are certain rules and certain agreements in place for PRB to ensure that the auditors are at the right level and that the audits that takes place is, well, exactly what it is supposed to be. So part of the requirements that the IOPSA has to comply with when they appoint the auditors is, first of all, experience. An auditor must be experienced. He need to really know his work. He need to be on top of the standards. He need to, this person needs to audit other people's work. So he need to have a next level understanding of the standards, of the details, the intricacies. Then some very important thing. It's one thing to know the standards and to have the experience, but they still need some training on how to do the work, how to conduct themselves, and that added support to further upskill them, to further give them the tools that they need. And then, of course, no auditor will be let loose on the audits, start his work without being thoroughly tested and vetted, that he can show he's capable of doing the work on all the necessary levels.
So I deduce from your answer, Herman, that there are methods and measures put into place to ensure that auditors are competent to perform audits. They've got the correct knowledge and skills and the training necessary and perhaps even the experience within the plumbing sector and in the plumbing work. Is that correct?
No, most definitely. An auditor definitely need to have the necessary skills in order to conduct the audit. In order to understand, it's one thing to do the plumbing right, but it's something else to oversee or to evaluate a plumbing installation, to look for the detail that the auditor needs to look for. And remember, part of that process is that auditor effectively help train the plumber, help upskill the plumber, give him that little bit of additional insight that he might not have. Often it happens that the auditor will point out a small mistake that the plumber make, but the plumber learns so much more in this process. And it's important that the auditors are really up to standard and capable to be able to do that, to fulfill that.
So, Willem, just to give you an idea, you know, it all starts off with, I mean, everybody seems to think that everybody would like to be an auditor, that it's an easy job, go out to site, you know, check a few things, come back, and, you know, you're a multimillionaire now. But that's certainly not the case. I think what happens is that the first thing starts off with a motivational letter from the individual who would like to be a part of the auditing team. And that goes through, and through that, you get a sense of where that individual is and follows the criteria that Herman's putting together there, is that, you know, it gives you an insight in terms of the individual. Is he somebody that's going to be a trainer? Because it's a whole lot of things, your soft skills, your knowledge of standards, how you deal with people. It's all that type of thing that comes in with it. And then there's additional things that come along where we have a 60 questions, 60 minutes. So that in itself, you know, you say 60 questions and it's done online, but that, you know, really is the crux of where it is, because now you're getting to the next level of who this individual is and what his understanding of the standards are. And it's a tough call to do 60 questions in 60 minutes. But again, we're looking at that individual that, you know, understands it and should be just rolling off your tongue in terms of that. And then we have follow-up. And I think in terms of the time frame, you know, Bianca would be able to give us a little bit more detail in terms of time. But basically then it's testing of systems and standards and everything else. So the process could take up to to, you know, 4 to 5 weeks in terms of the various levels of training that are done and conducted. And then there's a mentorship part that goes with it, where we would allocate an individual with a current compliance auditor to learn from. So there's many steps and balances and checks in place before an individual is actually put out on his own. So that just 5 minutes and a huge amount of processes and procedures that are in place.
Absolutely.
And I think that brings a lot of clarity on that issue. And many of our audience members may have had those questions and may have wanted to know exactly what it takes and what the criteria is of selecting auditors to become listed as auditors. How are auditors selected to perform audits on COCs that have been selected for audit from a PRB perspective, Herman?
Okay, so from a PRB perspective, the starting point is actually that all audits are on a statistical base. In other words, the PRB doesn't select the easy targets or the easy installations where to audit and so on. So there's a statistical process going through normally on a weekly basis to evaluate where COCs have been locked throughout the country. Based on various stats, auditors are selected. And the auditors, I mean, this is where the practicalities comes in. I mean, which auditors are in the area. So there's a, especially in the highly populated areas, we try to have multiple auditors in the area so that one auditor doesn't always audit the same plumber, so that you can allocate different auditors to the same plumbers in different areas. It's simply trying to manage a statistical, reasonable average spread across the country.
But I think also just to add to that, in terms of, you know, the auditors, so very clearly, you know, we identify in terms of the areas, and we'll get to IOPS's role just now, but basically, you know, we've got to understand that the auditing section's gone from a very low sort of base, and which Richard and Adrian will sort of attest to, is that, you know, in the beginning with PIRB, without the implementation in 2017 of the COC for geezers, but it's certainly rocketed in the last couple of years. So therefore, so has the database of auditors, you know, and again, we have more than, as Herman's just said, you know, in the major centers, you'll have more than one, but even in the smaller regions, we've got two, you know, so that the question always gets asked, who audits the auditors? Because bearing in mind, some of these guys are practicing plumbers, and it's there just for the sake of transparency, and auditors that practice plumbing do get audited.
Yeah, I think one of the important things to add in there as well is to understand that the audit allocations are done by PIRB. Within our office, we do the allocations. We do it in collaboration with IOPSA. I mean, IOPSA effectively confirm which auditors are available, who's got capacity, but all the selections are done by PIRB. IOPSA implements the process. But the system is set up as Steve said, that we can send auditors from, if need be, we can send somebody from Gauteng to go and audit the guys in Cape Town. That's part of the way that we can cover the whole country. All the areas of the country can be covered by the auditors.
I want to come in with a different question from a different angle, and most probably the audience members will appreciate this. Is every COC that plumbers issue when they do plumbing work, what can plumbers expect when it comes to the COCs that have been logged, and the ratio of audits that may be done on it, etc. What is the expectation there?
Okay, so the PRB work on a 5% audit ratio. The principle is that if we audit 5% of the work that a plumber does, the typical way that the plumber does things will normally be highlighted and identified during this 5%. So it's not only the 5% that's audited that is affected by that, but all the work done by the plumber going forward is also affected, because that 5% highlights certain trends, and it provides the plumber the education, the upskilling that he needs to do improved installations on all of his work.
Okay, so if there may be plumbers who have more of their COCs audited than others.
Yes and no. So this is one of the things that PRB manages actively try to manage, is we monitor the percentages for each plumber. We monitor the percentages for the country for all areas and so on. So as a rule, we try not to overburden any plumber with too many audits. The intention and it's attempted to spread it as wide as possible. There are level of stats that influence all of this. So yes, some auditors will have slightly more, some plumbers will have slightly more audits, some plumbers will have slightly less. It depends on various factors. But I think the most important is you'll never get that one plumber just gets all the audits, or that we're nitpicking on any specific person.
So fair game.
There's a big effort into going, spreading it evenly across everybody.
100%.
But also, Herman, just to add to that, Willem, is that we also do have a percentage in terms of the allocation through PIRB for what they would deem to be special audits. So it may have not been audited by or picked up for auditing, but there's been a complaint received from the consumer with regards to certain queries and questions with regards to that installation, and that can also be picked up as a special audit.
Well, thanks for that. And just before we continue the conversation, it's time to hit the brakes again. We'd like to remind our audience that this episode is proudly brought to you by Articulated Plumber. Let's continue the conversation. Welcome back. Now, to continue our discussion, I would like to ask the following question. What is IOPSA's role in conducting the audits? And if I can maybe just put a little clarity on why I'm asking that question is, why are the audits subcontracted or outcontracted to IOPSA?
Well, I think that the basis on this was if you see the role of the PIRB, which was to register the individuals and monitor it, but I think it was brought across that the PIRB were judge, jury, and executioner, so everything fell within their ambit, and therefore, for want of a better word, in terms of transparency and having a separate individual or a separate entity to be able to conduct those audits would separate the judge, jury, and executioner, and therefore, in terms of IOPSA, it was picked up in terms of that role, and IOPSA now performs all of those functions, and obviously the link between PIRB office and ourselves. That's the reason. It was just for a more clear, transparent PIRB in terms of they are not the judge, jury, and executioner, that there is a third party or a second party involved in the process of the auditing. And bearing in mind, through this and IOPSA's role in terms of training is that it's a double-edged sword in terms of from our guys on the ground, like the Adrians and the Richards, etc., is that we correlate a lot of this information that we come up and we find in the field where guys are maybe falling short or not very understanding certain aspects of the standards. Then we conduct the training and through our auditor's training and then put practical training or theoretical training involved for the sector, identifying areas that the plumbers are maybe not getting 100% right. So there's a lot of functions in it, but it's more about the transparency in terms of IOPSA fulfilling the role of the auditor.
Just as an add-on to what Steve was saying there, that if you consider that as PRB, as the office where Herman is, I mean, there were never enough people employed by PRB to actually fulfill that function. If they were going to go that route, it probably would have ended up being a logistical nightmare. But I've had several discussions previously with guys, and to get this terminology correct, according to Mr. Brown, that we have got registered professionals who are plumbers. And if you take that, the auditors, in order, one of the requirements for you to become an auditor is you need to be an IOPSA member. And you need to be a licensed plumber as well. So in other industries or in other parts of industries, you'll find that this process is regarded as a peer review. I know the engineering fraternity, all of those people do the same thing. So you've basically got plumbers checking on plumbers, and that's where the entry level or the entry criteria to become an auditor becomes more important. But the fact that IOPSA already had the resources as far as having to do these audits was just a huge plus to the whole process.
Adrian, can I deduce from that auditing is about accountability? When you say that it's peer review.
Yes, very much so. The mere fact that you sign a declaration or certify on your COC that all your work complies, This whole auditing process just puts emphasis on that the guys need to take care, and they need to make sure that when they do sign for something, that everything is in order. Because once your signature's gone down there, you've issued to your client and you've logged with the PRB, it's impossible to withdraw a COC. Once you've put it into the system, it's there for life. And you, if you do get audited, you'll have to answer for whatever you've signed on that document for.
100%. I want to ask my next question to Richard, if you may. Richard, can you just explain to me what exactly are plumbers audited on by the auditors?
Well, look, the short answer is the standards. The only thing that the auditors work to, or let's put it this way, can compare the plumbers' work to, is the South African national standards. So a colleague of mine, a very old dear colleague of mine, once said to me, the only function of an auditor, you got to just understand that the only function of an auditor is to observe, compare what is in front of you to the national standards, and report the differences. And that's your function. So there should be no reason for any plumber to experience difficulties if he knows. First of all, we've already said that it's imperative for plumbers to know what the standards are and how to be able to interpret them to a certain extent. You know, we all learn as we go along. But having done that and then applied that to your work, there should be no real difficulties. And increasingly, we are finding it out in the auditors. All the auditors will attest to this, that increasingly the quality of workmanship and the adherence to the standards is increasing exponentially. It really is. There's a big difference. So in a nutshell, we audit to the standards. That's the only thing that we can defend. I cannot defend my opinion. If I don't like the fact that that pipe is blue and not red, I can't say to you, remove it, please, change it to the red pipe, because that's my opinion and I have no basis on which to say that. So the only thing that I can look to is the standards itself.
Yeah, I definitely want to add on, and it's so important what Richard has just said, to understand that it's not the PRB that came up with the rules. It's not the auditor that decides what to audit and what not. It's not his opinion. It's not IOPSA's opinion. I mean, the standards are written through a national process. That's all discussion on its own, quite interesting discussion, but I'll leave that for now. But the fact is, the standards are there, and that's the only guide, or the only guide against which anybody is audited. And that's the responsibility of the PRB to verify whether the plumbing complies with the standards that were set for our country. PRB most definitely does not add or take away from any of those requirements.
Yeah, because I think it's also, sorry, Willem, it's also one of those things that the plumbers keep up coming and saying, the PIRB standards. And it's like Hanuman says, you know, we do not, you know, set, there are no PIRB standards other than following the standards and the laws of the land. So, you know, that's another aspect that comes up. PIRB says this, and it's not. It's the standards are very clear.
So we now know that, and from your answers, I conclude that we know what the plumbing work, when an auditor goes out, what the plumbing work is compared to, and it's compared to the standards. How will an auditor know what work has been done so that he knows that when he gets onto site to go and do his inspection, what to audit?
Willem, I can come in there. That responsibility will lie squarely on the shoulders of the plumber himself. When you issue a certificate of compliance, there is an opportunity for you, and there's a little block, or there is space on whatever type of, whether it's a digital copy or a paper copy, there is space for you to describe exactly what it is that you've done in detail in your own words. But then there's also categories that you mark off and say, yes, I've worked on the hot water system of this installation, or I've worked on the hot and cold water system. And then you go ahead and describe in your own words what it is that you've done. And the more detail that is there, obviously the better for you as the plumber, because often we come across instances, for example, where a plumber had plumbed an entire property except the solar system, let's say a new installation, because he wasn't a solar accredited plumber. So he ticks section 1, 2, 3 and so on does not tick solar, but he ticks hot water. So the auditor gets there and has a look at this. There's nothing else to indicate to the auditor that the solar system is to be excluded from this, because hot water system includes the hot water system unless it's stipulated. So there's confusion. There can be confusion. I don't want to be long-winded about it, but I would say the responsibility lies with the plumber, just to make sure that everybody knows exactly what you've done there. It's like anything, just word it properly.
Yeah, sorry, it's on that COC, but we also, like Richard says, we've got guys that have a stutter and they'll tick every single box that's there when they've only done one particular item. So it does have its challenges, and it goes back to the info that's provided by the licensed plumber.
All right. Okay, Adrian, I want to shoot the next question to you, please. Are plumbers compelled to attend the actual audits? And what is the procedure or the process if plumbers simply do not have the time to attend the actual audit?
Let's start off by saying that if you are in any way or shape or form available to actually attend an audit, that would be first prize. When it becomes a he said, she said, or they currently with the COVID setup, we do audits and we inform the contractors of the findings afterwards if they're not willing to stay outside or hang around outside while the audit's being conducted. But yes, if you are going to be sending someone to attend an audit on your behalf, to make sure that he understands the terminology, is acquainted with the requirements, that he, when you discuss something with him, that he'd be able to convey the correct message. In by the time we get to the office, we need to go fix X, Y, and Z. And when they get to site, they phone you, but this is not wrong, or what is wrong with this? And so, yes, there's no, it's not compulsory to attend, but it is very advantageous to the contractor to see if he can get there himself.
A lot of the plumbers find that the process is a training for them. It's a training process for them. And for them, it's about learning more. And they don't take it, if they failed a certain item, then they don't take it to heart as if, you know, I failed. They take it that it's a learning curve and I need to grow and learn from it. And a lot of the guys that I've audited are much better. I mean, the installations have improved tenfold simply because they've taken the time to be there and invested that time in being there and understanding that I need to get better at my own craft.
So there's actually quite a great benefit to attend the actual audit for the plumbers.
Yeah, sorry, Adrian, just to go back to what was said there by Lorraine, is that, you know, we've had many instances where the guys have actually said, you know, the half an hour, 45 minutes spent with the auditor, they've learned so much in terms of plumbing than they have in possibly the last year. So certainly the advocacy in terms of being there and learning is critical and key and adds a huge amount of benefit. Sorry, Adrian.
No problem. Just to add on to what Steve was saying just now, is that you even have some of the contractors asking whether they could bring some of their staff or some of the guys working for them to an audit so they can actually experience it firsthand, or they can go through the job to have a look at when they do leave the office next time to do an installation and it's going to be audited. The auditor starts looking at this and this and where it fits into and how it goes. So some of them even bring some of their staff along to have the, or to experience that whole process.
For that growth and development, it's excellent.
Yes, but also, Willem, it even goes further than that, where a company's got quite a few guys that are on the road and everything else, and they've been experiencing problems or failures or whatever, is that the compliance auditors actually go out on a Saturday or Sunday at the a Saturday at the request of the company owner, to actually do one-on-one training with the individuals that work from them. So we just had two cases in the last week where our compliance auditors are spending time with companies where they've actually got all their staff in place to learn. So it goes back to what Adrian's saying. It's encompassing, it's there, and it's beneficial and sometimes profitable now for the companies in order to make sure they don't make the same mistakes again.
Yeah, I just want to add in, just to make sure there's no misunderstandings. This is actually the choice of the plumber. So from a PRB point of view, we most definitely encourage plumbers to attend the audits. That's something that we require from the auditors. They have to invite the plumber, give them the opportunity to attend. But we understand. I mean, everybody's got a business to run. It's not always practical. It's not always possible to be there. So we definitely encourage plumbers to attend the audits as far as possible. But we're not just simply the audit will continue, and all the evidence communication will still be available and communicated to the plumber.
What happens if a client doesn't want the audit conducted on their premises?
Well, this is actually a very simple, short answer. We have to respect the wishes of the client. We cannot force any homeowner, any client to open his doors for an audit process. However, what we try to do is we try to encourage them. We try to understand why they don't want the audit to take place. Often it's fears, it's the unknown. They don't know what to expect, where to go from. So we try to explain to them what it is about, the benefit for the homeowner itself. Normally, once the people learn what's happening, they open the doors and invite and say, oh, please, we're so grateful for something that works. Please come in. But it does happen from time to time that owners just say, you know what, no way, I'm allowing it on my property. We respect their wishes, and that audit will then be cancelled.
Just before we continue the conversation, it's time to hit the brakes again. We'd like to remind our audience that this episode is proudly brought to you by Articulated Plumber. Let's continue the conversation. Welcome back. Now, to continue our discussion, I would like to ask the following question. Adrian, if I can ask you, what is a rectification notice?
I think it's important to start off by saying that a notification or that rectification notice is not a physical document. It's not something that can be copied to the owner. It's not something that can be added or downloaded anywhere. It is simply a system-generated communication to the plumber to inform him of any remedial work required on work that was audited. In other words, by the time he goes to his portal or his dashboard, you'll see that there's a rectification notice. You open up the audit sheet, you can see what went wrong. It's all marked in red or it's highlighted. And on the new system, it's just become so much easier. But I think it's just important to note that it's not something that can be sent to an owner or to the owner of a company or the owner of the premises being audited. It's simply just a message to the plumber informing him that he's got remedial work to do on an audit.
Right. And Herman, and I have to ask you now, because from a PRB perspective, what is the risk for plumbers if they do not attend to or complete the refixes that may be required by these rectification notices?
I want to start by saying I don't like your question. I don't want to refer to it as risks or something to the plumber. I think the reason why I make a fuss about that is, remember, the PRB process, it's not a punitive process. It's not we don't take a stick approach and try to knock the plumber until he listens. It's a process of upskilling to try and help and guide them through the process. So, yes, of course, plumbers need to attend to their refixes and need to do that. But and of course, there's a disciplinary process. But like all reasonable processes, it's aimed at upskilling and helping. So where plumbers cannot attend to refixes or where the processes start, it normally start with a warning. If there's persistent non-compliance, continues, the plumber just refuse to improve and to come to the party as they should and agree to do that, it can definitely end in suspension. Obviously, we look at everything on a case to case basis. Some severe cases might end in an immediate suspension. That has happened before, and in some cases, well, you have to acknowledge the specific environment, the specific facts at the matter. And I want to reemphasize the whole process. It's not a stick approach. It's not, let's see how quick we can knock the plumber into submission. Not at all. It is completely focused on how do we help upskill, help learn, help make sure if we know that every next installation is better than the one before, imagine where we're going to be in a few months.
That's a great answer. Thank you for that, Herman. I want to ask Richard. Richard, what is the procedure or the process if plumbers disagree with auditors? In other words, an auditor gets out to site, he does his inspection, he finds that there are aspects of the plumbing installation or repairs that do not comply with the standards or the requirements. He lets the plumber know about it by the rectification notice, and then he requires a refix. What is the process if the plumber then disagrees with what the auditor has found?
Yeah. No, listen, that's a very good question, because it's a very, very important thing that plumbers must realize, that they I don't even want to say that they are entitled to question. I almost want to say that you should question. You should question as much as you possibly can. And I've say that for two reasons. The first reason is if you're questioning, it means you are thinking about it and you are firm in your own knowledge base and your sort of, well, knowledge base is what I want to say. Secondly, it keeps us on our toes as auditors. There's no ways that we know everything. I mean, I keep saying to people I know that I've been in this trade for 30 odd years and I'm just scratching the surface. And that's the gospel truth. So the fact that, the perception out there that the auditors think they know everything and they can never be questioned, that must be chucked out of the window, please, because they have got to question these things. Okay, so to answer the question, there is a very clear path that the auditor must show the plumber. In fact, if the plumber disagrees, the auditor, you should go to the auditor, and the auditor will say to him, okay, here's a document that you can fill out, that you can pop back to me, and that then goes to the PIRB head office for further investigation and so on. The fact of the matter is that every single finding of an auditor can and should be, well, not should be, but can be questioned if necessary. I'm not going to say question every single thing regardless of its legitimacy, but we've often come across, auditors make mistakes all the time, myself included. Daily I make mistakes and I misquote things and missay things. So we're all learning here. Just be aware that process truly does exist. And it's simply a matter of filling out a form and sending it off. It's as simple as that. So I'm not going to go into the actual process. It's more important to know that it does exist.
Yeah, I think, Richard, just to go to that, I mean, you're 100% correct in saying that, but the plumber has to put it in writing, has to follow the due process, and it can't be as we've had with some others, I don't have the money to fix it. You know, there needs to be real hard tacks. You are audited in terms of the standards, and your response must be in terms of what part of that you disagree with that would be the evidence to question it, or you had covered it in some other way. But the evidence has to be there, and it has to be done in the appropriate manner.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, just one piece of advice for plumbers. When you do question it, and as Richard says, please pay attention and question when you think it's necessary. But don't list your reason as, well, I'm convinced it should work like this or something like that. Remember, you audited against the standards. List the standards. Say, you know what, this clause of the standard says this, therefore I believe my work is right. Don't say my uncle taught me this way and I'm sure it must be right.
Just to add on to that, if you consider, if you do get the opportunity to have a look at that disagreement with audit form, it's actually quite straightforward. There's three or four questions and answers involved. And the first and most important one, like I mentioned when you asked about attending the audit, were you on site? Were you the one dealing with the auditor? Or are we dealing with something that one of your staff members told you that the auditor told him? And then the second most important thing on that list is that you are going to be asked, your objection or your disagreement is based on, like Herman says, which part of the standard? How did this misunderstanding or how did this whole thing come about? If you're saying that I read 5.1.2 in this specific manner and this is how I understood it and this is how I differed from the auditor, that gives you a leg to stand on. But if you're simply saying, but the guy doesn't like me, or like Herman says, I've been doing it for 30 years or I've been doing X, Y, and Z, there are four or five points that you need on that disagreement with audit form. And if you have sound points on there, I can guarantee you will be listened to.
Adrian, while we're talking about the standards, and we have touched on the subject of COCs a little earlier in this conversation, is it stated in any of the standards that apply specifically to plumbing work that plumbers must issue COCs?
Yes, indeed. We have got three outright requirements in installation standards that require COCs from the plumbing professional body. They'd be SANS 10254, which deals with the installation, maintenance, replacement and repair of fixed electric storage water heating systems. Then we've got SANS 1352, which is the installation, maintenance, replacement, repair of domestic air source water heat injecting heat pump systems. Whole mouthful every time, but that's the name of the actual standard. And then last but not least is ANS 10106, which is the installation, maintenance, repair and replacement of domestic water heating systems. They all have a paragraph or a section that deals specifically with the certificate of compliance, or you need to issue upon completion of this very installation, you need to issue the COC from the professional body.
Richard, now, while we know now that it's you know, plumbers are compelled to issue COCs and required by the standards to issue COCs, who are COCs issued to? Are they issued to the consumer or to insurance companies? Who are COCs actually issued to?
Willem, they are issued to the owner of the property. Okay. In 10254, section 4114, it says on completion of the installation, a certificate of compliance, and I'm going to just paraphrase, must be issued in terms of the relevant national legislation, shall be issued to the owner of the installation. Again, I'm paraphrasing, I'm not reading the entire paragraph, but that's what the words say. Now, we have come across, and we've often had discussions surrounding when an insurance a plumber that is on the insurance panel of a particular insurance company changes a geyser for that insurance company, who is his client? Well, it's the insurer. So they issue the certificate to the insurer, where in fact they should be issuing it probably to the insurer as well as the owner. The fact of the matter is, when an auditor gets to that site, he has got every right to quietly and gently ask the homeowner whether they have a copy of that certificate of compliance, and they should have that copy. So it needs to go to the owner.
I can just quickly add to that. Remember, the owner is the person that owns the installation, and therefore you need to own the certificate as well. I mean, it's all about who's got ownership and the responsibility for that installation in the first place, and that's why it needs to be issued to the owner. Apart from the fact that the law says so, but
yeah, sorry, and it's the owner of the property 9 times out of 10. Well, if it's not him that's staying there, somebody that he knows and is links with and ties to is staying there, that is subject to any kind of risks or any kind of heads up that the plumber must give to them. We spoke about the non-compliance notice. So it's no good that notice sitting on a desk somewhere 3,000 miles away. It needs to be in the hands of the person staying at the property.
I want to shoot this question to Adrian, but I think that Hammond might be able to assist with answering that. Adrian, who becomes responsible for an audit if a COC was issued by a plumber who then leaves the employment of the applicable company that he worked for at the time of issuing the COC?
Okay, I think there are two things we need to look at. If we start off by saying that the Plumbing Industry Registration Board does exactly that. They register plumbers, the actual professional individuals, whereas IOPSA's membership is made up out of the plumbing companies, merchants, and manufacturers. So your employment with a specific company at this space in time is between yourself and the company. But as far as the COC is concerned, the licensed plumber who signed that COC or who signed on that COC or for that COC remains responsible for that COC, which makes it even more imperative that the professional signing the COC, whether employed by the company or by himself, actually goes around and supervises and inspects and makes sure that the work done on each of these COCs before he signs and logs it, that work actually complies. So that should you, in the event of leaving that company and getting a phone call to say that their job is going to be audited, you should be confident in yourself knowing that, you know what, I actually supervised it, or I looked at that installation before I left there. This should be a simple in and out. If you have signed for something that you've not even seen before, you might get a rude awakening. I've seen that happen before on site when you step in on an audit and the first thing the plumber wants to know is, can we withdraw or the COC? So I think it's important to note that the plumber signing or the registered professional signing for that COC will remain responsible for the work listed on that COC.
Yeah, I think one important thing, remember, it's been a legal requirement to make sure that plumbing complies with the standards. I mean, that's been a legal requirement for more than a decade. Plumbers need to make sure that it complies in any case, and that is the best way to make sure there's no hassles. Whether you with this company or another company, yes, the plumber who signed the COC always remains responsible for that. But if you made sure that the work was done correct according to the standard, it adds no burden to you whatsoever.
Well, thank you for that. Herman, while we've got you chatting to us, can you tell us just very briefly a little bit more about the audit process within the PIRB's new audit IT system?
Okay, that's actually quite cool. So the new audit IT system took into account a lot of the comments that we get and that the PIRB received from the plumbers and from the auditors. So the new system just makes it easier, much more convenient, much clearer to go through the whole audit IT or through the whole audit process. And without going into the detail of how it works, I'm sure we all came across that. What we really like about that is the rules didn't really change. The rules are essentially what it used to be, but the interface makes it much easier. We're all familiar with social media chat platforms. There's different apps you can use for chatting and so on. And it's same type of environment on the new system. All the failures, anything non-compliances that's been identified is listed with evidence, clear, easy to see for any plumber. Any communication between the plumber and the auditor is through a chat interface that makes it simple and easy to communicate and move forward. And it also makes sure that all the evidence on refixes, on whatever has been done, is there. So we do believe that it makes life quite a bit simpler and even more transparent than it used to be.
So basically, to deduce from that is that the new audited system simplifies the audit process, while the rules remain the same. The rules remain the same, but the actual process is simplified by the new system.
Absolutely, that's essentially the direction that it goes. It even goes a step further, and you might have heard about the performance levels that the new system will keep track of to basically rate, and the more plumber is compliant, the better he does, the better his performance rating will be. But that's a feature that all of us will see in the near future.
Adrian, I'd like to shoot this question to you. Is there any proof, and I know that we've touched very briefly on that a little earlier in this conversation, but is there any proof that the overall quality of repairs and or installations of plumbing work has improved since the introduction of auditing?
I would like to make that a resounding most certainly. The quality of work overall has improved in leaps and bounds. I'm sure if Herman, if we had to force him to pull some stats in that, you'll probably find that on the stats, you'll find that there are less and less failures of these audits. And on the audits that do fail, there are not only less, but also smaller items that are on the list, like minor technical stuff, or there might be something that someone missed somewhere, but it's no more a general failure from point 1 to point 40, and maybe there's one line that the plumber happened to get right. It's actually improved vastly. To the extent we know that the when it comes to being a contractor, the last thing you want to do is you don't want to go back to any job to fix work that you've already done or your staff has done just to comply. If the original installation was done properly, there wouldn't have been any hassles. My personal opinion is that the main reason for this is that the guys out there, when I say the guys, I do apologize. It is, we've just finished Women's Month and we have got Lorraine here. The guys and girls that own plumbing companies will, if they were honest about it, they would probably own up to the fact that they are familiarizing themselves better with the plumbing regulations and standards, and that they actually apply them more diligently to their day-to-day operations. If you take we mentioned this as well earlier, when the guys start spending time, effort, and money on upskilling their staff that go onto job sites on a daily basis, it shows. I mean, if previously you might have had, and I use this term in jest, it's not an offensive, I hope it's not offensive to anyone, but if they're no more pipe fitters going to site and just plonking something down and walking away and someone else signs a certificate. The guys are actually starting to think about what they do, and they put and there's pride in what they leave behind, so that you don't want to get caught by an auditor. It becomes like a mind game thing. I've done this job. I'd like to see what he finds wrong on this installation. So as far as that question is concerned, I think the majority of the professional plumbers can pat themselves on the back because there's been a huge improvement.
Well, that's excellent. That's excellent. Steve, I would like to revisit the question that I asked a little earlier about the selection criteria for becoming a listed auditor. And we spoke about the methods and measures in place to ensure that auditors are competent and they're skilled and knowledgeable. Is there any ongoing training once an auditor is listed?
Yes, most certainly. I think it's one of our key focuses that we've started. So since the inception of IOPSA taking over the auditing process is that we have monthly meetings. I think we've got one next week. And again, there we go through our code of practices, what it is that we're required to do. We pick up items in terms of consistency. And I think our biggest thing is trying to have, I keep calling it that McDonald's model, that if an auditor in Joburg is auditing, it should be the same process in Cape Town or PE or Durban. So we're not quite there yet. Again, you're dealing with quite a few individuals, and everybody seems to see the same job. But yes, training is of vital importance to us. We sometimes bring in a couple of guest speakers. We'll have Herman there to address the auditors and have strong discussions and debates in terms of the focus. We also do, we don't like to call him a roadshow, but we would go down to the regions and meet with the regions individually. So our process in terms of training is 100% trying to find that real good mechanism and model that all the auditors are on the same page. And the one thing that I would just like to bring into this whole thing is we've got to remember that the auditor is also accountable, you know, so, and it goes back to the training and everything else. But, you know, in the event that there's a problem, and sometimes the plumbers see it as being the auditors being too harsh, the reality is the auditor audits according to what the standards are there. He cannot be willy-nilly and be sort of, that's okay, leave this. I mean, there are certain mechanisms which you can do it. But in evidence, you know, if an audit and something went wrong with an installation and the auditor hadn't picked up those things, we are then also accountable. So we're really stringent in terms of sometimes it's like, are we going too far? But yes, we have to. We have to make all those notes and go through because there is accountability. We've got to remember that we've got two organizations that are professional in what they do, and we're only as good as the people that we have on the ground. And therefore, the importation of skills and training is utmost imperative to uplifting this whole industry of ours.
Can I just add on to that little bit that Steve is very modest when he says that we do have training in that. All the auditors are on a WhatsApp group like most other groups or associations are. So on that auditors group, you get a WhatsApp that says that on Thursday at 11 o'clock, there'll be training and it is compulsory. No exceptions or no excuses will be accepted. So I think he's trying to sound like the nice guy in the room, which is actually not always. When it becomes compulsory training and you will attend, then every single auditor knows that whatever's going to be discussed, you'll probably end up signing for that information that was conveyed to you. Sorry, Steve, I had to put that in there.
Yeah. Adrian, since I'm not the nice guy, you've just ruined my whole day now. You know,
and I was about to compliment Steve and say, you know what, from a PRB point of view, I really want to compliment you and your team for the effort that really goes into that. There's a lot of actions in upskilling the auditors. The same as we said, the whole system is built to help upskill plumbers the same way auditors are continuously upskilled. There's questions, there's detail coming back that we never anticipated, where people say, hey, what about this? How do you address this? How do we make this practical? So there's robust debate that goes backwards and forwards and goes into the process of making sure that the auditors really are on top of their game.
I think also, it's a team effort. And I think that, you know, again, I just want to emphasize the fact that, you know, we are not perfect and we are here to learn and we're here to adapt. And, you know, we're never going to stay the same. But we really have some good people that are really passionate about our industry. And again, it doesn't go back to rands and cents. Because when you see some of the trips and the additional work that's being done, and also Willem, you know, the auditors have become the link. You know, we have on a daily basis, and I'm sure Adrian and Richard are here, but we would get, you know, from plumbers that we've dealt with that are phoning before they even do a job just to make sure that they're doing things correctly. So we've become like a mentor to the plumbers that we actually deal with on a daily basis, and that you can't add any value to. It's immeasurable in terms of the amount of info and support that the auditors are doing above and beyond, you know, the function of being an auditor. It's phenomenal. And I really am proud of the team. But at the same time, you know, when it's time to play, we will play. But when it's time to really deal with hard issues, as Adrian says, I can be a bit of a enforcer and this is how it's going to be. But I think it's a real concerted team effort that we can all be proud of.
Yeah, all jokes aside, the comment I was trying to raise, Steve, I should actually thank you guys for what you're putting us through. But the message behind the WhatsApp story is that, you know what, when it's time for, like you say, when it's time to play, you play. But when it's time to, that auditor training at 11 o'clock is compulsory. It's not I'll decide if I can join or I can do this. You set aside the time so that you end up on the same page and all the other auditors in Joburg, Cape Town, all over the show. Everybody undergoes the same training at the same time so that there's no misunderstandings or any little mishaps lined up.
One of the things I just wanted to say is, you know what, you have to look at the results. What's the end result of all of this? Where does it come? Are there any references for that? And we more increasingly get comments to the PRB from homeowners. I mean, remember, that's the people where the biggest impact lays. They are the people that score out of this, that get the right installation, make sure everything is fully compliant. And we get more and more compliments from that direction. I'm sure you found it. I mean, I've seen a lot of the comments on the auditors groups as well, where they report when the homeowner came back and said, you know what, we are so excited about this. Thanks. Sometimes just say, you know what, thanks for the professional way that this has been done. Other times they say, well, we're grateful for the what you've identified that we didn't know about in our system. So, I mean, that there's a real satisfaction in seeing the final effect of all of this and the good that it does for the people of our beautiful country.
I think it all boils down to the consumer at the end of the day. I mean, without the consumer, plumbing wouldn't exist. I mean, plumbers would have no plumbing work to do. So I think it boils down to the consumer. If they're happy and if this audit process and the auditing of the plumbing work and installations done at their premises is valuable to them, then at the end of the day, I think the auditors are achieving a great goal. Just before we say goodbye, it's time to hit the brakes one last time. We'd like to encourage our audience to follow Articulated Plumber on Instagram and Facebook, not only to find out more about the Man in the Van podcast, but also to learn more about any exciting and interesting news that we may have. Our handle on both Instagram and Facebook is Articulated Plumber. Can I just ask, just before we end of the session, and I do appreciate all of your time, each one of you individually having set aside the time to come and join this conversation. Thank you so much. But just before we go, can I ask to all of us in studio as a collective, is there anyone who would like to share with us any exciting news within the plumbing industry, any exciting news regarding auditing, etc.?
Willem, I think, you know, the only thing that we can say is, look, you know, COVID has been a terrible time for everybody. But, you know, just to reflect on what we've done, you know, so we became very proactive in terms of from an IOPS and a PRB point of view. And we realized that, you know, we would be better coming out of COVID than we were going in. And, you know, you were part and parcel of some of these the training endeavors that we did. And we had two training sessions per week for the auditors. So we utilized that time in order to make our compliance auditors better. better and industry better. So for me, that's the encouraging part. And we'll certainly see the fruits of it now that we're down to level two and we're getting out there and making it happen. But as I say, I can't emphasize enough how proud I am of the team and the plumbers, you know, that have been out there, that have embraced the way in which the audit's been done. It really is a real positive message, if anything.
Yeah, I think part of the positive message, I can't tell you what's happening tomorrow, but what I can see is happening today is a continuous improvement, continuous participation, continuous growth in the industry. Every month, there's more and more COCs being locked. There's more and more audits that gets allocated, even with a new system. I mean, it shows that there's life, that things are happening. Even in this challenging new times, there's a lot of positive and a lot of growth happening. So there's a lot of good to look forward to. What exactly it is, well, we'll be surprised to see ourselves.
There's life during COVID and life after COVID-19. So I would like to thank each of you for your time to sit in this conversation, to share the information that you have and to clarify a lot of aspects that our audience may have had quite a few questions. And I think quite a few of these questions that they may have had have been addressed and answered through your answers that you've shared with us today. Thank you for your time. Thank you for having joined this conversation. And once again, to our audience members, also thank you for having listened to this conversation. Thank you for having joined us in this conversation. Finally, it's time to switch off this engine. Cheerio.
Man in the Van Podcast, your regular audio drive time companion.